Life sustains itself by cell division. So does cancer. Breast cancer cells multiply faster because of CDK4/6 proteins. But what if we could block those proteins and stop runaway cell division? To that end, Dana-Farber scientists laid the foundation for CDK4/6 inhibitors, new drugs that are increasing the survival rate for many advanced breast cancers. Dana-Farber's momentum of discovery keeps finding new ways to outmaneuver cancer. Learn more at danafarber.org/everywhere.
Low, low prices in every suburb.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, I'm Scott Jagow. Home prices are back to where they were in March 2004. The Case-Shiller Index out this morning reports an 18% drop in the price of single-family homes. That's October 2008 compared to October of last year. It stinks if you're trying to sell, but we all know home prices, at least in some places, had become outrageous. A company that got into the mortgage business at the wrong time was GMAC. It's a car financing company, and until last night, it was about dead in the water. But you, the taxpayer, stepped in with another bailout. The government is taking a $5 billion stake in GMAC. And it's coming out of the money for banks since GMAC was allowed to become a bank. Marketplace's Steve Henn has more.
GMAC has been scrambling for weeks to get a piece of the bailout pie. GM's finance arm was in tough shape. During the housing boom, it branched out from its core business, making car loans, and became one of the most aggressive home lenders in America.
After that happened, home lending self-destructed.
Keith Crane publishes Automotive News. He says the housing crisis left GMAC too strapped to make many car loans, and that's crushed GM's sales. With this cash infusion, GMAC's books suddenly look a lot better. But Crane's not optimistic that'll mean more sales for GM.
GMAC is going to want to make money, and they're not going to want to subsidize the sales of General Motors.
When GMAC was founded decades ago, its entire purpose was to help move cars off the lot. But now, as a standalone bank, it has to answer to its own shareholders and keep banking regulators happy. In Washington, I'm Steve Henn for Marketplace.
Wall Street's year is mercifully almost over. So far, the Dow is up 56 points, 0.5% to 85.40. The NASDAQ has gained 12 in the early going. The S&P 500 is up 5 points. Earlier, Japan wrapped up its trading for 2008. The Nikkei had its worst year ever, a 42% loss. European shares are up 1 to 2% so far. To paraphrase Yogi Berra, 90% of the economy is half mental. So much of the fallout we've seen is driven by psychology, the fear of investing, the confidence to spend. This morning, we get the latest consumer confidence numbers. You'd think they have to turn around at some point, but as Yogi said, the future ain't what it used to be. Here's our senior business correspondent, Bob Moon.
Forget the old saying, wait till next year. We may have another year of waiting before consumer confidence makes any real turnaround. Bernard Baumol heads the Economic Outlook Group in Princeton, New Jersey. He says mounting job losses and relentless housing market worries are accentuating the negative for American consumers.
Even though gasoline prices have fallen significantly, it's just not enough to really offset some of the other major problems that households are facing on a daily basis.
Baumol hopes the new president's stimulus package will improve consumer attitudes, but he cautions there's no quick fix.
Even the second half of the year is not a time when I think households are going to uncork champagne bottles and start throwing confetti in the belief that the worst is over.
Don't figure Baumol for a complete pessimist. He does see a brighter new year, a year from now.
2009 is going to be a year of recovery, of recuperation. It sort of sets the stage for a much better economy in 2010.
Which raises the question of what kind of psychological impact a prediction like that has on consumer confidence. I'm Bob Moon for Marketplace.
This is the Morning Report for Tuesday, December 30th on Marketplace.org. The big natural gas company in Russia, Gazprom, had a big year. At least the first 6 months, profits were up 83%. But the plummeting price of energy is taking its toll, as it is everywhere. Stephen Beard has more from London.
Gazprom rode the crest of a wave in the first half of the year. The soaring price of oil buoyed up the price of natural gas. The company's profits almost tripled between April and June. But then in July, crude prices began to fall. And today they're down by almost 75% from their peak. Natural gas prices are plummeting too. Analyst Chris Grabowski says for Gazprom, the year ahead will be grim.
With most serious commentators looking to pretty weak oil prices in the first and second quarters, that will sort of drain money out of Gazprom all the way through to the middle of the year and maybe slightly beyond.
Plunging energy prices have hit the Russian economy hard. The Kremlin has spent a quarter of the country's foreign currency reserves trying to stave off a collapse in the ruble. From the European desk in London, this is Stephen Beard for Marketplace.
It's not just oil and gas companies worried about their profits. The alternative energy industry is concerned about next year, even though so-called clean technology had a pretty good 2008. From the Marketplace Sustainability Desk, Sam Eaton reports.
As recently as last summer, companies making everything from solar panels to wind turbine gearboxes had months of back orders. Then everything changed.
Now there are literally warehouses in various parts of the world containing solar panels that don't have a home.
Ethan Zindler is an analyst with the research firm New Energy Finance. He says that oversupply combined with the credit crunch could spell doom for clean tech in 2009, which is why all eyes are on Obama's proposed stimulus package and any renewable energy incentives that may be part of it. But Zindler says spooked investors may already be shifting to safer and cheaper bets, like companies that make existing buildings more energy efficient.
It shows a very reliable payback over time and therefore is relatively low risk for the person who's financing it.
And it's labor intensive, which means energy efficiency projects may have a greater chance of attracting federal dollars because of the green jobs they create. In Los Angeles, I'm Sam Eaton for Marketplace.
The end of the year rush is on at the doctor's office. People who've already met their annual health insurance deductibles are trying to get their appointments today and tomorrow to get more bang for their buck. In the new year, a lot of doctors' bills will be coming out of pocket once again. Danielle Carson has more on that.
Patients are cramming into doctors' and dentists' offices, whether they're sick or not.
I try to get as many doctor's appointments in as possible.
How many would you say that you do?
Probably six in December.
Anne-Marie Martinez waits in the lounge of the Rockville Internal Medicine Group outside Washington while her husband sees his doctor. They met their deductible months ago and are packing in doctor's visits before the new year. Dr. Shashir Khatan usually sees about 85 patients a week. This month, the tally is over 100.
I think it's been a little bit more prominent this year. Some people may lose their jobs next year, so maybe they're thinking ahead and saying, well, I may as well get my health insurance done now.
All these jammed appointments seem harmless enough. Doctors make more money, patients see to their health care needs. But Khatan says all those last-minute appointments can crowd out sicker patients.
It kind of makes it a little lopsided because we have less access to acute visits, so access to health care is definitely being affected.
In more ways than one, says Henry Aaron, a healthcare analyst at the Brookings Institution.
If you are encouraged financially to go to the doctor at the end of the year for even very minor reasons, you're going to be spending money that is comparatively high cost relative to the benefits you receive, and that's wasteful.
Aaron says it's no wonder that the U.S. healthcare system is the most expensive in the world. In Washington, I'm Danielle Carson for Marketplace.
We continue now our series of year-end interviews. We're not looking back on 2008. You know what happened. We're looking ahead, and today's topic is China. We're joined by our correspondent in Shanghai, Scott Tong. Scott, remind us where China's economy stands right now.
Well, China's getting walloped like the rest of the world is.
Just a couple months ago, the optimists were wondering if China could be the savior of the global economy, that it could keep buying things like iron ore and energy, and Buicks and Chinese people would still keep going to Starbucks and keep the global economy going. Nobody is saying that anymore. A lot of job losses. There's a big rumor going around that a company that makes the most iPods and laptops in the universe may lay off 60,000 workers in southern China before long.
Wow.
So it's hitting hard here.
And what are the scenarios for China's economy in 2009?
Let me give you the good one first, Scott. That is that by next spring, Beijing's massive stimulus package, which is basically a whole lot of infrastructure spending, starts to kick in. And as China builds more roads and bridges and buildings, it will import a lot more of the raw materials it needs to do that. That could bring up commodities prices and energy prices, and investors could get more confident around the world.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the bad case scenario is if the slowdown hits China much more, and some people are talking about a hard landing scenario, you could have social instability. I mean, China sits on this political fault line. The government is an unelected government. And basically, when people are happy, nobody tends to complain much here. But you never know. If mm-hmm. growth slows down to a small number, which for China would be 5% growth, we don't know what happens.
And of course, we can't talk about China without talking about the U.S. and China. Where does that stand?
Well, China was the world's lender and the lender to the United States, and that helped to blow up the housing bubble, at least indirectly. And that relationship, of course, is over now that that bubble is no longer. So now the U.S. and China have to sort out a new relationship between the two of them and on their own. Because just as the United States economy can't just depend on consumption and buying cheap things from China,
mm-hmm.
China has to get away from exporting its way to economic growth. The way this thing could go badly for U.S.-China relations, though, is if Beijing tries too hard to rescue some of the exporters, either by cheating on the currency or choosing other trade tactics that other countries would consider protectionist, you may have a trade war that starts to brew. Who knows how that's going to play across the world, especially with the new Obama administration coming in.
Our correspondent in Shanghai, Scott Tong, Happy New Year.
All right, Scott. Happy New Year to you. Thanks.
Share your opinions with us at marketplace.org. In Los Angeles, I'm Scott Jagow. Thanks for listening and have a great day.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.